Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Is This Just Fantasy? I'm your host, Geordie Bailey.
And I'm your other host, Duncan Nicol.
And Duncan doesn't need to come up with a cute little nickname for this episode because it's our annual end of year special. I'll look back at 2024.
I know, Geordie, I can't believe it. Another year on the pods. This is what, the end of year three? It's incredible.
That is, it's genuinely, like, kind of crazy that it is three. You know, I remember back here, like, a couple of years back, you said, like, wow, I can't believe how much of this podcast you've done. I'm like, meh, this is fine. I think this is actually a little crazy at this point.
I know, it's really impressive. The amount of content, the breadth of books that we've covered already, it's been fantastic. And particularly over this last year, the growth we've seen in our community, those that follow us on Instagram with this fantasy, Is This Just Fantasy podcast, it's been really nice. It's been really nice to get a lot of community engagement. We always love it when we hear from our fans. Someone wrote in not too long ago, just talking about like the Priory episode and their take on our opinions. And even kind of said, you know, these are some of the things that I like to see on your podcast and why I listen to you. And it just means so much to get that kind of feedback. So if you are listening to this, please do go over, follow us on the Instagram, or just leave a simple review on Spotify or your platform of choice. 5 stars, obviously.
5 stars. And yes, thank you so much for those of you who reach out. It really means the world to all of us, especially Duncan. He absolutely gets, he's kicking with joy when it happens. Now, I think this is an episode which is for all our fans because, you know, this is a review show. You know, it is a book club, but it's a review show. This is a show you come to know, should I bother reading this? And this is the definitive list because, Duncan, this is where we give our categories for the worst book of the year, the most disappointing book of the year, our most surprising book of the year, our favourite book of the year, and of course, the crowning glory, the best book of the year that didn't necessarily come out this year.
Absolutely. So this list does specifically cover the books that we have read and reviewed on this podcast before anyone get surprised that we're covering a book from like 1970.
And I think, how many books are we covering that actually came out this year? Like, just
two?
Children of Anarchy and Anguish?
Technically, Gibbet one? Hill got a re-release.
But that's the oldest one!
So you're quite right, Rory. We are nothing but contemporary with the fantasy genre, but that's, you know, that's why we love it. I love exploring the breadth of what's come before and working out all the little pathways and influences as it kind of trickles down into the modern day. I also like to just shout out the fact that we do separate favourite and best. I think it's very important to recognise that, you know, you can have your own personal tastes, but sometimes you do have to look at some and go, nah, that's just better written.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I was a little annoyed last year when you introduced favourite as a category. But as I was getting ready for the show, I was thinking, you know, Jolene is probably the best Dolly Parton song, but I think my favourite is Islands in the Stream.
I mean, a great example. And I think it's really important also when people have, like, conversations around, you know, what's your favourite band? Who do you think the best is? Because then it's just different categories. Because favourite, that is just personal opinion. There's very little to debate. But when we say best, I feel like you can quantify that just a little more. Sort
a little
of,
more.
Maybe.
The Beatles are going to get brought up a little bit more than in favourite.
So, Geordie, let's start out. And let's actually start out on a positive note. Because the category I think we should start with is surprise. Mm. What book took you completely by left field? Was it a recommendation that I brought to the table, so you genuinely didn't know it was happening? Or was it something that you brought to the table, but it was just so much better than you hoped?
This was actually a bit tricky for me this year, Duncan, because I don't think we really went for so many unknowns this year. You know, even something like, you know, The Last Unicorn, neither of us have ever read it before, neither of us really knew what it was about.
It has a reputation.
It has a reputation, that's right. So even though we enjoyed it a lot, it didn't really take me by surprise. Like, yeah, no one told me this was going to be, like, I knew it was going to be good.
Oh, so Geordie, where does this leave you then?
In a bit of a tricky spot, but ultimately, I did come up with a book, and I think it hits the mark.
That's on me.
Okay, oh, I'm going first. All right. So, this definitely comes down to a This exceeded my expectations, even though I expected to enjoy it. When I looked back at sort of where my expectations were, the one that really just shoved it way higher was Empire of the Damned by Jay Kristoff.
Yes, Jordy, I'm punching the air. I had the exact same pick.
Really?
Yes.
Oh man, that surprises me. I didn't think we'd get the same one for this one.
No, I went back and forth. There were so many options, but this is the one that was just better than I expected because I loved Empire the Vampire, but I still, if someone was talking to me about it, I'd be like, yeah, it was good, but it was a bit generic. It had these very kind of tropes of the kind of apocalyptic genre. The characters were very mopey, but in Empire the Damned, I mean, the characters are still mopey, but it just blazed its own trail so much more, and I got in so much respect for Jay Kristoff, the author, for just going out there, pushing the boundaries, and really just letting loose a bit more. Like, the final fight in that story, gosh, it's still vivid in my mind. Like, the almost anime-esque.
It's very Balls to the Wall. It's just like, okay, more, come on!
And I have a lot of respect for that, and I really enjoyed it.
You know what I found out this week, Duncan?
I hope it's sequel-related.
It is sequel-related. The last book, I don't think it has a title yet. He just said in his Blue Sky post, what do they call Blue Sky posts?
Why are they called Blue Sky posts?
Well, this post on Blue Sky.
I've never even heard of it. So I'm going to...
Okay. Duncan, you're a social media guy.
Yes.
I specifically asked you to set up a Blue Sky account. Did you have no idea what I meant?
Not particularly. I mean, sometimes it's no overcast where I'm living, so there are blue skies.
That's true. It's not really fair on the English to have to use a website called Blue Sky. But on his not Twitter post, it's the new Twitter, he said, all empires must fall, November 2025.
Oh, that's both so close yet so far away.
Yes, but Duncan, tomorrow will only be 10 months away.
That's so very true. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait. I believe this is a planned trilogy to see how this story is actually going to wrap up into a bow. I have very high hopes for this. Jay Kristoff, please do not let us down.
I'm sure he won't. I mean, maybe he will. I mean, it could be a bit of a tricky ending, but I have faith. Much like Gabriel, I have faith. But, Duncan, we were your united front on the most surprising book of the year. Does that mean we now go to the biggest disappointment?
Oh, it does, Geordie. And Geordie, I really struggled with this one, which sounds quite bad. Like, what was the most disappointing book? Because there were some real contenders here. And, oh, Geordie. So, I just want to say, I really did consider Children of Agony and Anguish for this position, but I haven't given it the title. I think my expectations were sufficiently low. It wasn't truly disappointing to me. And so I'm going to give the most disappointing title to what I just have to say must be an objectively better book, but a book that I went into with really high hopes and really high expectations. And again, this was actually still a close call between this and another book, which I shall name shortly. But ultimately, I actually named The Gunslinger.
Oh man, I was this close to naming The Gunslinger.
So,
no, that's definitely my runner-up.
My runner-up would obviously, for those that have listened to the episode, be Priory of the Orange Tree, for the fact that I did not finish the book and I did finish Gunslinger. But I do just think that the reputation of Stephen King and the reputation of the Dark Tower series in general. And by the way, people have reached out and told me, you know, what we hypothesized in the episode, that the series does get better and the next book's far more representative and the first book's really just kind of a cobbled together short stories and please don't give up. And I hear you and I will consider, but I just went to The Gunslinger expecting to be blown away with one of the finest bits of like dark fantasy written by the master of horror. And I found it clunky, I found it boring in places, it had sparks of good action, but I never felt like I connected to the characters, and I never really felt like I knew what was going on, or really cared to know what was going on. So sorry, Stephen, it gets my most disappointing book of the year.
No, and I totally get it, man. Like I said, that was my runner-up as well. It was that, I mean, like, I guess Dalagut was probably, like, in third position because, like, it sounded good. You know, when people say it's like Legends and Lattes, that builds up my expectations for the book. But no, I mean, I just didn't have high enough expectations of that to be disappointed. I was definitely disappointed when I discovered that I had made a mistake by including The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas. I really thought I had done something clever there, but no, I just really goofed up. That's not a fantasy book. It's like a thought experiment. It was a good story, though, but I was disappointed in myself. But no, it really has to be obvious. It had to be Prior of the Orange Tree for me.
And you know what, Geordie? If I'd given the time and the energy to finish the book, maybe it would have gone up into first place for me. But tell me, why? Explain to people. This is a beloved book. Obviously, go and listen to the episode for the full story. But summarise, what went wrong?
What went wrong is just a really bloody long book. And it doesn't need to be that long. I just... learning so much about the history of this world and its religions, it just really takes its time. And, you know, I read afterwards, like, I was going on Goodreads after that episode, and at one point it said, the author has called it a feminist retelling of George and the Dragon. And I was sitting there thinking, being like, well, you know, if you want to do a feminist reading of George and the Dragon, that sounds like a really interesting book. There's a lot of different ways you could take that. Like, would you do a sapphic version of George and the Dragon, where, you know, the character of the knight and Saint George? It's weird. I mean, I don't want to get distracted. Duncan, do you think there's anything, like, political about the fact that we turn Saint George, a dude who was raised in Palestine, into, like, a typical chivalric knight in shining armor, and we don't acknowledge that?
I mean, yes, there is, and it's very important that we should acknowledge that, and the fact that he seems to have gotten bundled up in the sort of King Arthur realm of,
yeah,
let's just take this guy and put him in the trappings of an era that he definitely wasn't from.
Father Christmas, too. All right, sorry, I got distracted there. Like, you want to do a feminist retelling of George and the Dragon? Why does it have to be 850 pages long? Story's George and Dragon, it's pretty short. It's like eight, it's like, I don't know, a, you know, two sides of A4.
I know. It certainly gives me the vibe, if you ever had a Sunday in school, a book called The Bloody Chamber. Well, that's one of the short stories in a collection. And
never heard of it.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily recommend you go and seek it out, but I had to study it at GCSE or A level. I can't really remember. But that was a collection of, like, fairy tale retellings with a feminist angle, with various degrees of success. I won't go into it. But I feel like that's what this needs. Like, if you're going to do a fairy tale of George and Dragon, a short story would have sufficed. This was clearly, you know, part of the origin was building into a grander fantasy. And you can do that, but I wouldn't say that was your objective. If that was your objective, I think you did poorly. If you wanted to frame a larger fantasy around it, or have it as one of the threads running through, that I can buy a little more.
Totally, man. I mean, like, obviously, that doesn't actually define the whole thing, because it's such a broad, expansive book. You know, that the stuff around, like, combining the politics of East and West, telling this big, expansive story, it's so ambitious, and it clearly works on a lot of people. It's just disappointing that for all that ambition, it's fundamentally not an ambitious story. Like I said, it's George and the Dragon. You gotta slay that dragon. It's the most basic a fairy tale can be. And, you know, the fact that you have scenes where this big divide between East and West is overcome so easily, at that point it becomes kind of insulting to the reader for all of the time you've committed to this story, that it would be resolved so smoothly, so easily. Definitely most disappointing of the year. Sorry, Gunslinger, you can't claim this crown.
It's a sad time, and maybe something that speaks a little bit to the interest, because I know you spoke to in the episode, like, does Prior of the Orange Tree need to be shorter, or does it need to be, like, built out longer? I know this is a common debate. Are you still on the ground that it just, you would like to have, you know, read a shorter book? Or would you accept the theory of, you know, turn it into a trilogy? Give me discrete sections.
So yes, I'm still opposed to the idea that it could be a trilogy. It just couldn't. I mean, I'm totally with her on that. If you just, there's no place in the book where you could slice it and say, yes, that's a satisfying ending without rewriting it quite substantially. You'd need to do little, like, for example, you'd need to do little, so the bit where, like, they, that, I can't believe I'm doing the episode again. No, I'm not doing it. There's a bit where she comes back and she has a triumphant return. She rescues the queen. That could be end of a book. The problem is that, like, Tane and, Nicolaes, they're just stuck in the middle of their stories of a time. There's nothing exciting has happened with them for a while. So if you were a big fan of those characters, you'd be like, well, I didn't care about Iyad's climax. I wanted to see what happened to Nicolaes.
And thus we get to the great complexity of reading Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Okay, Torty, I won't cause you any more pain by recounting part of the Ometry. Let's move on to a completely different category then. Your favourite. This is the best switch. This is something really positive, and I do want to just kind of keep on that positivity. What was your favourite book this year, Geordie? What was the one that you're just like, this book to Geordie? Like, maybe the thing where you just go, I appreciate, not everyone might love this as much, but for me, this couldn't be more aligned with my taste. You know, for me, particularly for someone who's very into the pulps, I really do appreciate that they are not for everyone. When I'm reading some Svagur de Camp, you know, The Goblin Tower, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get this isn't going to make everyone happy. I get this probably isn't that amazing, well-written book. But there's just something about the fast pacing, the roaring action, where I'm like, yes, this is for Duncan. What was your book like that this year, Geordie?
So this was really probably the hardest category, because I knew what the best and I knew what the worst was. So it was pretty hard to get this together. And to be honest, if I'm completely candid, my best and my favourite book are probably the same book, but I feel obliged to do separate categories, to broaden the episode. I don't want to just say the same book over and over again. So, just to cover myself a little bit, I want to bring in an honourable mention.
Go on.
This one's an honourable mention because it is probably my favourite fantasy novel of the year, candidly. Not necessarily best, but definitely my favourite. But we didn't do it on the podcast. This is something I read in my own time.
Okay, no. Well, I hope we get to read it together at some point in the future. What was it, Geordie?
We just might. My favourite book of the year was The Daughter War.
Yes, the sequel/prequel to The Black Tongue Thief that we read last year. And it was a very good book.
It was, and quite recently I told you that I was reading it, and that I wasn't having such a great time. I said it was pretty dull.
I know. I was so disappointed. I was like, well, that's a write-off. I'll take it off my plans for next year.
It really comes together. It just really comes together. It justifies itself. There's parts of that book that are a little, like, eye-rolly, where I feel like, what's his name? Bowman? Buhlman, that's his name. Where Buhlman's kind of having he's kind of eating his cake and having it too, where he's like, he's just having these long scenes of people doing witty, smart dialogue that you feel like he's kind of showing off. But it really pays off. Like, he there's a reason he can show off, because he's such an amazing writer. And when things get a little exciting, it justifies all the time you spent getting to know the characters. It justifies all the time you spent learning about familial politics. It justifies all these scenes about, our main character standing awkwardly in the back of the room watching her brothers make fools of themselves. Because those stories are what it's really about. It's not about the war. It's about... I saw someone say online, and this was just perfect, so I'm going to steal it. It's not a war story, it's a war biography. It's someone talking about their experiences of war. And once you understand that, it just falls into place. But that's not my favourite book of the year, because I have to do it from the podcast.
Save it for next year, 12 months' time. That should be a challenge. I need to find you a book that's going to, like, unseat The Daughter's War. Yes, what's your actual favourite of this year?
My favourite of this year just because it was nice sliding back to a warm bath, was Percy Jackson.
Oh, that is heartwarming.
I mean, it kind of... Percy
Jackson Lightning Thief.
Percy Jackson Lightning Thief. It kind of had the home field advantage because it's been one of my favorite books since I was, like, 7 years old. So, yeah, it had the home field advantage there. I've always loved it. But I was really impressed by it. It's held up really well. Like, I read it through again this year, and I was like, this is a good book. I thought, there's nothing really embarrassing about saying I'm reading this book, because it's just good stuff, man.
I'm so happy to hear it. I definitely had similar feelings rereading it. I never read Percy Jackson as young as you. I was in my 20s when I first read through the series. But rereading it, it just has such a good pacing. And I always felt that the characterization of the young cast was really on point. Like, you're right, they never feel cringy to be with, but they never feel too adult or out of place.
Do you think they would still not be cringy if, you know, they were a bit more 2024 12-year-olds?
I mean, I don't really know what 2024 12-year-olds are like that much, but the fact that they were born in 2012 does concern me and make me feel old. But I think that's what the book does rather well, is other than, I think, and this is really standing out in my mind, because I believe we talked about this on the episode, other than Percy saying that his mum was a fan of, like, Metallica when she was young, or Metallica were the band that was big when his mum was young, I believe it's fairly timeless. Other than obviously the lack of technology in places, but even then they sort of explain it away with just all technology doesn't get on with the Greek god magic vibes.
I know, that's really great. Like, I feel like some cultural references in future books might fall down a little bit. But no, you're totally right. It's not like they talk about movies that have just come out. Oh yeah, then they don't, like, name drop specific artists. They just say, you know, like, it was this type of music. It was hip-hop music.
Saying that, I'm also projecting that from my position as an adult who grew up in the right era. So maybe a young person who read it today would be like, nah, you're wrong.
I wonder if the thing that would cause the biggest confusion would just be kids taking the bus by themselves, you know? And I don't mean, like, the school bus. I mean, like, getting on Greyhound bus and going over long distances. I wonder if that would be a bit like, whoa, that's a little crazy.
I mean, I feel like even at the time, I would consider that a little crazy. But I think that's part of the adventure, isn't it?
Yeah, but no one knows they're going to LA. I think if you saw, like, three kids get on a Greyhound bus and go from New York to New Jersey, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. The little things. But it's still such a good book, and it does such good lip service to retelling the Greek myths from a very different perspective.
Yeah, in a sort of fun, engaging way, they can get kids excited to learn about more Greek mythology. Now, Duncan, I rather think that Percy Jackson probably isn't your favourite book of the year, so could you please enlighten us? What is your favourite book this year?
This is really challenging, and I'm going to cheat as well and just give an honourable mention. So, obviously, I'm here, and I'm a massive fan of Robert E. Howard, and we did cover Shadow Kingdom.
I'm going to tell you, Duncan, that was on my maybe list, because it was a pretty big surprise.
It was. I was sort of thought that it could have been your surprise book. Obviously, it can be for me. I read it and knew it was amazing, and I'm glad it brought you a lot of joy, and I certainly had a lot of fun dissecting it. I think some of the ideas that we came up around the character of King Cole as a proto-Conan, or as a more pure form of the character, was some of our best conversations, and it's shocking that we had them at the very start of the year. I highly recommend people go back and listen to that episode with an open mind, because I think it goes places that I was never expecting. But I couldn't quite call it my favourite. I think it just, being so short and sweet, I never quite got as involved in the characters as my actual favourite book of the year. So, Geordie, I was really thinking hard, but ultimately, I knew definitively at least what author I was going to give this to. And I'm going to give my favourite book of the year to Joe Abercrombie. And I have gone back and forth. I believe I discounted Red Country quite early, but between Best Served Cold and The Heroes, I went left, right, centre, all over the place. And in the end, just about gave it to Best Served Cold as my favourite book of the year.
Right.
I know.
There we go. So we did numerous trilogies this year. We did all of, I almost said Brendan Sanderson, all of Joe Abercrombie's second, again, this really should have a name, second set of First Law book trilogy that are mostly standalone, but not really.
We did the Thrawn trilogy, or the Heir to the Empire trilogy, or the Empire trilogy, they keep changing its name, by Timothy Zorn. And we finished...
And of course we wrapped up with Children Yes, Running in
the
Anguish.
Yes, the Legacy of Arisha series. Oh god, that was a journey.
It sure was. And it's getting a movie that's coming out at some point. I think the script is done. I think they're casting and stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to the first film in that series. And you know what, Jordy?
They're getting a second bite at the apple.
You're right. Maybe they can fix things. I would have definitely gone down the, you know, HBO 8-episode long series route, but actually, no. I would have wanted them to go down the just make it like Avatar The Last Airbender and animate it. But that's my preference.
But then you could just rewatch Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh, that's a brilliant suggestion, Geordie. Very well, I'll do that. Always with the good ideas.
Duncan, why is Best Served Cold your favourite book of the year?
Because it was gripping. It was both long and like filled out and gave me the depth and the time to get to know the characters, but also was comprised of these short, punchy sections. Best Served Cold is separated, it's a revenge story, the title didn't give it away, and each section of the book sort of follows one of the targets on our main character, whose name has just slipped my mind, Moretza. Oh my goodness, what's going on?
Monza,
thank you.
I think you may have been mixing up with Morvir.
I think I am. Monza's list, you know, she crawls her way out of the grave, and each little section is one of the people she's targeting, and each section is thrilling and compact, and she gets a team together, and the team dynamic is everything I would want it to be. But also, I love the way that Joe Abercrombie balances this fairly extensive cast of characters, all have their own personal goals and their personal relationships with each other. And it's one of these really great things that, surprisingly, I don't feel like I see enough, certainly in the literature that we've covered, where a character has this kind of character arc, and then it's midway through the book, so they get another one. And then another one. Like, the characters keep evolving. They don't. It's not just like they've got one lesson to learn. I really feel like in Best Served Cold, he manages to give some of his characters these sort of extended arcs where they start at one place, they maybe go to a happier place, and then they end up back in a bad place. And to also have a story that's filled with so much sort of war and strife, and everyone at points is so downtrodden, but yet to somehow galvanize it and give it this uplifting feel, like, yes, the world is just a sea of violence, so let's ride the waves. I'm like, thank you, Joe. This is fun for me in a way that I'm almost concerned about myself finding so fun, but you've managed to capture it. And genuinely just loved it through as a kind of exciting story. This is a book that I feel like I would easily recommend. I'd be like, you should give this a go. So, and if you are thinking about getting into the First Law series, I would, as someone who's read the original First Law trilogy, Blade Itself, For Their Hand, and The Last Arcane of Kings, I would actually recommend Best Served Cold as a standalone entry point. If you're someone who's like, oh, I might start reading something, if I'm not liking it, I'm going to drop, then don't read Blade Itself first, read Best Served Cold. But I think overall it's certainly a more complete and superior first novel. And I don't think, as I tested with you, Geordie, you lose anything reading Best Served Cold on its own without reading the first trilogy.
Except for knowing where the vampires come from.
Yes, but they're a really small part of the plot. Don't be put off.
They are. And also, like, there was actually, now that I'm looking back at it and I realize that, like, the Eaters are a thing, I think I genuinely got a very special experience of being, what the fuck is happening right now? Like, A guy comes in, you think he's just like a pretty good fighter, like he's killing people with ease, and then he puts his finger through the front of someone's skull, and you go, whoa, 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 what? What are you doing? That's special. I think people who had read the First Lord trilogy to begin with would be like, I clock in this guy's an eater right away. They're not going to be as outraged and surprised as I am. Duncan, a good choice of book. Everything you've said, I can corroborate. And also, good use of the word galvanize. Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Obviously, I really did think about giving it to Star Wars as well, as a massive nerd. But while I love Heir to the Empire, I just don't think as a book series, particularly on this revisit, I was like, this is really good. But it's not like my favorite fiction.
Yeah. And Duncan, we did like Heir to the Empire like halfway through the year. I have to be completely candid. I don't really remember much that happened in that trilogy at this point.
It's something that I spoke about in the episode. I regularly forget, like, some of the little vignettes. Like, if I remember them, I completely forget which book they take place in.
Yeah. You know, it's, I remember the shape of it, and I remember certain characters, but there's a lot of stuff that just gets very foggy. Like, how did Card like surprise Thrawn at the end? I just don't remember, and I feel like I probably should, considering we did like those books.
I'll tell you now.
Yeah, you won't find that on anyone by list for me today.
Regularly, when it comes to discussions of the old Star Wars EU and like their legends, I forget what actually happens to the Katana fleet. There's this like fleet that they're hunting in the second book of these lost Republic ships. And I actually have no content. Like, do they come up again? Who ultimately uses them? Does the Republic have them now? Did they get destroyed?
That's a good question, actually.
I don't know if it's answered in the books here.
Ultimately, it wasn't even that important to this trilogy of books. Anyway, moving on from that, you can find out where we place that in, like, a year and a half when we do our top 100. But that's going to be a monster episode. I'm going to have such a good time. But, Duncan, we've been through so many high highs in this episode so far. But now it's time to descend to the very lowest lows. Duncan, we find some absolute rotten apples on this podcast. And I want to know, looking back at 2024, what was the worst book we read? And also, one more question. I think it's a good time. How do you think this year stacks up in terms of quality to the previous two?
Oh, that is an excellent question. Though this year definitely was filled with less surprises, and as you mentioned earlier, we sort of did a lot more sequels and trilogies this year. So the diversity was definitely down. I would probably say, in terms of the quality of the books we read, I think there were a few more disappointments this year. And
interesting. There was
also, I think, a few more books that we covered this year, which were admittedly fantastic. But because they weren't surprises, I don't think they stood out as much to me. You know, we did Dune this year. Amazing. Great that we did it. It was great to reread the book, hot off the second film. I've rewatched it now. I'm so happy I saw it in cinema. Not that it's not great to see at home, but in particular, I was rewatching the opening section of Dune Part 2. In the cinema, when those bodies are first falling off that cliff, you like felt each one hit the ground in the silence. Whereas at home, you're just like, is this scene still going? Yeah, they all die. Come on. So
I did fall asleep the second time I saw Dune 2 in cinemas.
I think that can be allowed.
I think I was just a sleepy boy.
I mean, Jordy, I'll tell you this. When the first Hobbit movie came out, I ended up seeing it 3 times in cinemas. I don't know why. But the third time was basically just for a nap. I saw it once with my family, once with friends. And then the third time, I think I can assume I was like my younger siblings. And they were going to see a movie that I was just like, I'm not watching that. I'll just go and see. They're doing an extra showing of The Hobbit. It lines up time-wise. I'm just going to go and sit in that again. And I dozed through most of it. I was dead to the world. One of only 3 times I've fallen asleep in the cinema.
Yeah, it was a first for me with first for me with that one. I reckon if I become a dad, I'll fall asleep in movies a lot more.
Particularly now, my local cinema has like all the chairs of recliners. It's lush. My partner brings a blanket with her. She's like, shove it in your rucksack.
I know. Tomorrow, Nosferatu comes out, and my girlfriend and I are going to the new fancy cinema where you have a table and they bring you food.
That is lush. I say that's lush. I don't see why I can't just buy the food at the front and then walk it in with me.
Well, you mean like from like the restaurant next door?
Well, yeah.
I'd never do that. I've never done that.
Fair enough. To be fair, I'm also, when it comes to cinema etiquette, I'm one of those people who's very much like, okay, guys, let's eat all your stuff through like the adverts. But when the film starts, can we all just, you know, watch the movie we've paid for? I'm not the best.
I promise I'm quiet, Duncan. I unwrap my sweeties very gently and quietly.
Yeah, and then you put your hand in the bag and rustle it, don't you?
No, I don't. I'm annoyed. A good boy. I was watching Conclave the other day in the cinema. I was like, I can tell an explosion is coming soon, so I'm going to wait for that moment to go in and grab more candy.
Well, good for you. But yes, this year I think it's been a
Duncan,
bit
Duncan, what was your worst book of the year?
My worst book of the year. Once again, I'm cheating, Geordie. I got to give an honourable mention and then my worst book of the year. Right. I really thought about making this Gibbet Hill. Because it's
understandable.
It was a bit of crap. But then again, it was also, at the time, a bit of crap, kicked out by an author, intentionally forgotten. It's a short story. I read a scan of it from a 1800s newspaper on a library website. It just feels unfair to really put it in the ring with anything else.
Yes, it would be like if you were on the bus and you just so happened to be next to Billie Eilish and she was just like humming to herself and you said, that's the worst song this year.
I mean, what a scenario to be in. And I just...
Yeah, why would Billie Eilish be taking the bus? That's crazy.
And you know what? I probably still wouldn't be the worst song this year. Talented person.
Oof.
Right.
Oof.
But my worst,
yeah, Duncan,
actual worst...
he really hates Kendrick Lamar. And I think you should really tell a lot of people that you have beef with him. I think that will go well.
Alright, I'm not getting drawn into this anymore. My worst book of the year, surprise, surprise, was Children of Agony and Anguish. Maybe this is a bit mean. Maybe I should say I found it to be Priory because I couldn't finish it. But then I didn't finish it, so it feels unfair. Maybe I should say... No, I can't think of anything else, actually, that really hit this level. This book was awful. It was an awful end to a trilogy. I don't know what went wrong. The plotting, the pacing, the characterization. It didn't feel like the same world anymore. This is my worst book. Maybe not so much for being self-contained, a terrible piece of fiction. But because it capped off a bizarrely awful series that started so high, like hit some turbulence, started to nosedive. That's still the second book, and then the final book's just the crash and the fireball. What happened?
It really can't be anything else. Children of Anguish and Anarchy is also my worst book of the year, and it really couldn't be anything else because as much as there was stuff I didn't really enjoy, you know, like you said, Gibbet Hill, not that pretty bad. I didn't like Dahlgren Dream Department Store, and frankly, I sour on it every time I think about it more. But I think this is the only bad book we read this year, and we've read some really bad ones in the past before. I hate to think where this stacks up next to the Demons in Silver of the world, but yeah, this is just, it's kind of insulting, to be honest, that the author would nakedly put in so little effort.
And it is a bit bizarre, because I actually don't think this is on the same level as your Demon Silver and your Jewel of Jewelry. So there is an element of, maybe we have just covered some better books this year. But when I was thinking, what's the next step up from this? When I looked over the year, I sort of just went, well, Gunslinger was really disappointing, but it had these flashes in there where I was really following it. I actually did think about Murtagh for a bit, and I just went, no, I was having fun. Worse, I was bored. That's not quite the same, and it did ultimately get where I wanted to go.
Yeah, there's some cool sword fights in Murtagh. You can focus on that.
This, though, I
I don't think there's anything this book where which made me go, yeah, this is great, this is exciting.
I know, and it in some points I felt like it should be, and that's what was almost confusing and why it was almost the most disappointing book. Because the opening escape scene, the scenes of these people flying on vines, sort of Attack on Titan style through the treetops, the big epic climax with the giant magic and fireballs, and oh, this could be cool. But it was just underpinned by this deep feeling of, why are we not talking about the interesting concepts? Why have you brought in this external villain that undermines the sort of the interesting conversation around racism and society inequality? Why have you taken this complex villain, turn good guy, turn villain, turn good guy, turn villain character, and just said, oh, you made one sacrifice at the end. Don't worry about it. Hell, why have you forgotten your own rules on magic?
I know. It's... if I were a conspiracy guy, I would even say, like, is it a possibility that Tomi Adeyemi didn't finish this book? Like, she started it and then, like, got a ghostwriter to finish it for her because she was just stuck on it. I don't really believe that. I think Occam's Razor says, yeah, she just couldn't do it. This just was like, it was, writing this series became too much for her. You know, there are plenty of books out there which we know, series-wise, we never get to see them. Like, I think if Nicholas Eames had the same kind of hype train behind him that this one did, I think he'd be a very stressed out man trying to get the next Kings of the Wild book out.
There's a lot to be said. Yeah, the impact that sort of meteoric rises in fame can have on an author. You look at the big names like Patrick Rothfuss and George R. R. Martin, you know, two men that just haven't put out a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the legacy of Richard Hayes, I'm going, what would the world look like if those two guys just sort of went, right, it's half the length of any of my previous books, but I'm done. You know, bind it, package it, sell it. I feel like this is almost part of it there. This is just someone who's gone, I set off so many interesting threads and I just don't know how to weave it back together. Which is so disappointing, because when you're dealing with sort of big series, and I'm going to talk about Stranger Noir a bit here.
All right.
A book that I wasn't a massive fan on, but something that I really praise that book is that how all the little threads of that tapestry got sort of brought together at the end, and that satisfying denouement. And it's this weird thing I've been thinking about, how at the start it's excitement, it's enjoyment, but it's excitement, it's seeing the potential where it could go, and that's good, you need to do that. I just don't think that matters for Squat if you then don't actually tie it back together. Do you see what I'm saying here? It's like, well done, you came up with a bunch of good ideas. But if you don't know where it's going and you can't bring it together, it ultimately is going to leave me feeling unsatisfied. And the real kicker for me, and I talked about this in our top 50 books, one of my main kind of categories is like rereadability. How much do I want to go back and revisit this? And despite how much I enjoyed Children of Blood and Bones, I'm never going to revisit it because I know it doesn't go anywhere.
Duncan, I think that this is a shared feeling. You know, Children of Anarchy and Anguish, it had a positive reception from fans, and that was sort of bewildering for me. I was going through the New York Times bestseller list recently. Duncan, do you know how long Children of Anguish and Anarchy was on the New York Times? Do you know how long Children of Blood and Bone was on the New York Times bestseller list?
Oh, I actually have very little reference points for this. So let's say it was up there for a whole year.
Well, that's kind of insane. But it was there for 25 consecutive weeks.
Okay. Right.
Which is extremely high. Extremely high. To give you a comparison, okay, the biggest fantasy novel of this year is Fourth Wing.
Yes.
That has been on that was on the list for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. 5 consecutive weeks. Do you know how long it was on the New York Times bestseller list for this year?
What? Children of Blood and Bone?
Anarchy and Anguish.
I don't know. A week?
Didn't place.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately the series had to get done. I think at a certain point, we can say with some confidence, her publishers said, we've given you a long time to finish this book. We've slowed down. We've given you the time it's taken to finish it, but it's time to bring it home. And to be frank, she phoned it in. I don't think she tried. She can say all she likes about how much character of Zaylee means to her, but I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. If you cared, you would have tried harder, because you can write good books. You've written one. And she's written the screenplay for the film, so hopefully she hasn't lost her touch completely.
And to be clear, I do wish Tony Adeyemi the best. I really would love to see this story retold in a different medium and come to a more satisfying conclusion. But dear God, this book was bad. If it was somehow cut off from the rest of the series as a standalone, I think we'd be on Demon in Silver Lines. As it stands, it hurts me more. So Geordie, Agonies and Anguish, your worst one, my worst one. Just not both our most disappointing, because our expectations were so low. That speaks. Oh, that is a cruel fate.
Yeah.
Now, just before then, the next step is the best book. Let's bounce back from that negativity. And Georgie, there's quite a few books this year that we have, you know, read this year that we enjoyed and haven't even been mentioned. You know, neither of us has said Assassin's Apprentice. You know, the Farce series is one of the most
good
influential
book. Very good book.
Series out there. You know, the likes of Promise of Blood, not even mentioned.
Pretty good book. I'm definitely going to read the next one. I keep almost doing it, you know? I keep almost reading the next one and being like, I'll just do this in my own time. I won't do this for the podcast. I haven't gone around to it yet.
No, they're chunky boys, but I also found them quite light reads as well.
They are. That's a really acceptable part. Like, I think if we had to go for a baseline episode quality or book quality for the podcast, and the baseline quality was Promise of Blood, we'd be two very happy boys.
You know what? I'd agree. And sorry, I think this is a small spoiler to what's about to come up. Promise of Blood is not one of my best books, but I can't...
No one thought it was.
But I could never really knock it. Just as I said, it's such a just a nice benchmark. You know, it does some stuff well, some stuff not so well. It's creative. It has its own identity. You just want to be like, that'll do. That'll do, book. Well done. So, Geordie, what actually is your best book of the year? Put aside your personal preferences, the one that you'd point to and go, objectively, I declare, the best book the It's Just Fantasy podcast has covered in 2024.
Well, obviously, it's not objective. Please don't put those words in my mouth. This is still, you know, my opinion. But no, this is what I, you know, I think, like, if I had to point to a book, I would say, like, this is just, like, the most well-written. And up to this point, I have not mentioned Joe Abercrombie in any of my options. I definitely could have picked one of these books to be my favorite, but I deliberately chose not to. I felt it would be unfair to the listeners of the show if I just talked about Joe Abercrombie the whole time. We spent enough time talking about him this year, and I said, you know, we're not going to talk about him next year. We need to take a break. But we read three of his books, and they were all really good. All of them could have been the book of the year if we hadn't also read the other ones. There's your spoiler. The top book of the year is gonna be one of the three.
Oh.
I thought about Best Served Cold. A great introduction. Very exciting book. And quite different to the other two. None of the other two have that same sense of, oh, the world's falling apart and let's just let it ride. The Heroes is widely praised as, you know, as one of the best fantasy novels ever, I've heard it called. Because it's so impressive and it's so, and it's so ambitious in the way it tells its story, even though, Duncan, you lied to me about the format.
I didn't lie. I missold. That's what a car salesman said to me once.
And I don't think it was quite fair of you, Duncan, to rule out red countries so soon, because I kicked Best Served Cold out of the running before I did Red Country. It was really neck and neck between Red Country and The Heroes.
Oh, wow. If I had to guess, if I had to place down my bet, I'm going to go The Heroes. That'd be your pick.
Why?
I think that The Heroes does a better job spinning out a large tapestry of multiple characters' perspectives. I think its comments on war and conflict transcend some of the commentary that we get in Red Country. Also, Red Country, although I loved, I feel that it had certain issues where it wanted to both talk about the actual experiences in sort of the Wild West, and I'll be honest, I don't really know that much about American history in depth, just to be very clear, but also it wanted to be a homage to the sort of spaghetti westerns and the ideas of the Wild West in popular culture. And I felt like it never quite got that balance, but it also had some of my favourite characters, and that's really the ticking point. Red Country, I think, had better individual characters, but The Heroes, I preferred more the ultimate setting, world and themes and movements of the plot. And I picked Best Served Cold because I think it struck the balance. It might not have some characters as good as the ones in Red Country. It might not have some of the moving mechanisms of the plot as good as The Heroes. But it collectively balanced the two in a way that just brought it above the others for me.
Well said, Duncan. And the thing which pushes this book above the rest is just the impressiveness. This is why it's the best. You know, this is why I've said, which of these is the best written? Which of these is the most impressive? Which is the one that makes me think, wow, I can't believe someone actually wrote this. This is so amazing. And that's The Heroes. The Heroes is the best one because it's actually kind of astounding that it works as well as it does. It's about this big, confusing battlefield. It follows the kind of minute movements of individual units without ever being confusing. And Duncan, I've seen a lot of like war documentaries and a lot of like people explaining like, oh, why did this side win this battle on YouTube? And the movements of troops is really confusing. It's very hard to follow. And it's incredible to me that Joe Abercrombie pulled it off. You know, you have this big glossary of names at the front. You flick back to it and you say, ah, yes, I remember who this character is. But even when I was listening to the audiobook, I didn't need that glossary that often. I was able to remember who these characters were, even if they were pretty unimportant and they were going to die in like two chapters. I felt like the perspectives we saw were so wide-ranging and so utilitarian for the plot. You know, you've got like main characters like Black Calder, but you're just as happy to spend your time with, you know, Red... Oh, God, what's his name? It's Red...
Red Beck.
Red Beck, thank you, Duncan. You're just as happy to spend your time with Red Beck, you know, like, and see his chapters. You're never disappointed that you've swapped character perspectives. You're always excited to see what they're up to. And of course, you have the chapter. You have that chapter where every time someone dies, it switches with their killer. And there's a reason that you told me about this chapter first all those years ago, because you knew it would entice me. Because that's a really, it's just really interesting. And it's just really cool. And you wish it was the whole book, because you want to imagine what that would be like.
It does it so well. And I'm really glad you kind of hit on the point of the kind of clarity in this book. The fact that he has all these moving parts, and they're spinning about, and Joel Comey, yeah, he's setting out a battle, but he's also telling a narrative that thematically makes sense for the point he wants to get across. I really enjoy the fact that there's a side character in this book, who, by the way, is only seen in this one book, far as I'm aware. I haven't read all of Joe Abercrombie's first old works, but so far, only appears in this book. And he's a small character. He's just that guy who's been in the armed services his whole life. He knows how to do soldiering. Yeah. And his position in this story is that he just sits on the sidelines with his troops, and they'd never engage in battle, but because they're there, another group of people can't charge, and it's really, like, monumental, but...
It's so true. And you're never bored of that, guys, chat.
That's the beauty
even
of it.
Even though, like, nothing ever happens, and I knew, I could just tell from the way it was written that he was never going to do anything, and that was the point, I said, these chapters are still great, and I love visiting this character.
I really appreciate that. You know, I love fantasy, obviously, while we're here. And I love the fantasy battles that we read about sometimes. And I love seeing individual characters when they're fighting, using different abilities and bouncing off walls and sending magic spells. But quite often, when it gets to large-scale battles, what really happens is there's a charge, the two sides meet, and basically, it looks bad for our heroes until the cavalry arrives. There you go. I've summarised at least 90% of fantasy battles. Or if you're reading Glenn Cook, it's about four pages of sort of war poetry, and then you just find out who wins at the end. But this actually took a battle and broke it down step by step. And it's so nice to see, because it's actually very rarely done.
Yeah, there's a reason why this is my number one. I don't really have any regrets about this. I feel very confident about this, and I know that, you know, in 2 years' time, when we do our top 100, the heroes is going to be up there. It's going to be fighting for top position. But Duncan, what was your top book of 2024?
Oh, Geordie, this was very challenging, as you can imagine. And I always feel bad. Part of the reason why we have favourites is that so I can squeeze in more books I like. But this is the book that I just went, listen, if you're adjacent to the fantasy genre, if you're only going to read one book, like, and you just, and I want to just give you an experience and see why something can be both fantastical and disconnected from the real world, but at the same time deliver very real emotions, and that's what I find so nice about reading fantasy and science fiction to a fair extent as well, is the fact that, yes, the settings and what's happening is complete, it's often disconnected from our reality, but the emotions are equally real, or the thematic points are easy to move across and apply to our lives. And the book that I just feel like did this so beautifully, and the book that I just want to kind of cry from the hilltops that everyone should read, sort of regardless of age as well, is The Last Unicorn.
Very well placed. I'm more sorry that I've neglected it, because it is a wonderful book.
Reading The Last Unicorn, for me, almost took me back to being a bit of a child again. There was something about this that put me right in the mind of reading Tolkien's The Hobbit, which was one of the first fantasy books that I ever read and reread and reread and reread. And to be taken back to that place was such a good experience, and for it to be both accessible but beautifully written as well. Geordie, we really struggled in the episode, because I think we just kept saying, oh yeah, and it's beautifully written, oh, and the metaphor, the language,
so
the poetry of it, the not quite, not in the style of Shakespeare, but you know, it's been written in a way, Peter Spiegel has written in a way where you just got to go, why is this? It's not poetry, but it's like poetry. It's just falling off the page. It's so well done.
What was it that they say in Stranger Dreamer, but a language is like poetry written in honey?
Great way to just get a reference to Stranger Dreamer in. But yes, an equally great...
It's a good book.
It's a very good book. The Last Unicorn does that.
I don't want to have a discussion of the best books of fantasy without bringing it up. That's all. One might say it was a little disrespected at some point this year.
One might, but someone else might not. So this is why I really like The Last Unicorn.
Listen to our top episode.
It's a very, you know, it's a very direct, simple plot of a unicorn going out to find others of her kind, for she fears she is the last one left. No, she doesn't fear. She is indignation that someone could suggest she was the last one left. And we get a band of merry adventurers, and it's a really good conversation about what it means to be human, you know, what it is to overcome fear, what it is to have hope, and where fairy tales sort of fit into our daily lives. I cannot recommend it enough. I recommend it to damn near everyone. Geordie, do you have anything else to add it's really...
Not only that I'm not surprised that this is your number one, because I remember in that episode being like, wow, I'm really impressed by how well Duncan is, like, relaying this story to me, because I felt like you were really honed in to what was happening. I don't think we've ever had an episode where you're correcting me more about, like, what happened and, like, giving me specifics. Because you were just so locked in on this story, and you really had sort of devoted yourself to it.
It feels almost embarrassing to me. It's like, I've never come this close to almost being like I've got a crush on a book. I'm like, you're just so good. They're just so wonderful. I'm in love with this.
That's really funny.
Still haven't seen the movie. I don't think I need it.
No, I mean, you don't. I mean, you've had a wonderful experience of it. I think, you know what I think would actually be a really great experience would be like, sort of, I think a play would do really well with this, you know? I think that would be a great format for this show. Do it Warhorse style, do like a unicorn puppet. I think that'd be beautiful.
Yes. Oh, visualizing the Red Bull on stage.
Oh my God,
but
yes.
You wouldn't do it as a puppet. You'd have the whole stage and you could be so abstract with it. Mm-hmm. And the lighting, oh, I'm seeing it now, mate.
Yeah, like a big head, that but like perfect. Its body would be like just like an unfurling like flag almost flapping across the stage, and you could like do multiple puppets for the unicorn. You can have one be like miniaturized, so you give a sense that it's just gigantic.
Yes.
Oh my God, guys, should we get into showbiz?
Maybe that's our route. Geordie, this is what you need to work on. Start writing that script. Turn the last unicorn.
I literally told Duncan I was making really good progress in the story I'm writing right now, and he's like, throw it away! Write a play script, Geordie.
Forget it, Geordie, we have
You've
a better
never
idea.
Done that before.
The right to the last unicorn are in no way confusing and difficult to manage.
Don't worry.
And that's another thing, that's why it's such
and
a
then,
gift.
Then anyone can exploit it. Sorry, Pete, that was really mean.
Perfectly
I
apologise. But... that's the other thing why I think this book's such a gift, because the rights were held up for so long, and there was a time you could not legitimately buy this. I don't know anywhere, definitely not in the UK, so I'm so glad it's available now. Easy to access. You can get it on Kindle. Go read The Last Unicorn. It's not very long.
No, it's not.
And it might not be life-changing, but I can't imagine a single soul regretting it.
It will certainly be worth your time. Well, Duncan, thank you for a high point to end our discussion of the books we read in 2024. I feel a bit bad for Dune. It's a great book. Didn't get mentioned once in this episode.
No, I feel kind of bad. And also Cersei. We have not mentioned by name yet.
Look, Kirky was a good book, but like, it wasn't Song of Achilles. And that is fatal flaw. Don't write good books and then write books that are also great, but not as good. It's a fatal flaw.
Well, I'm still very excited to Madeline Miller's next book, which I believe is going to be based around the Persephone myth. And as someone who has read the entirety of Lore Olympus, I am so excited.
For a moment there, I mixed up Persephone and Andromeda, and I was like, now that's a feminist retelling of George and the Dragon. But yeah, Persephone, fine. It's a bit overdone at this point, isn't it?
Yes, potentially. I'm not going to lie, Lore Olympus did... excellent reinterpretation on that, but I would love to see Miller take her own hand to it.
Well, I think if anyone can reinvigorate a slightly played out story at this point, it's going to be Sarah J. Maas. I think she gets another bite of this apple.
Maybe one day. Sorry.
Maybe. Duncan, I think I'm the one who gets to decide if we read A Court of Wind and Fire, right? It is my turn to pick the next book.
Yes, it is, Geordie.
Court of Silver Fire. I think that's the next one. A book I do own, by the way. I picked it up for £1 at a boot sale. But unfortunately, Duncan, I don't know where it is. It's in a box somewhere, so I'm afraid we won't be reading that one next.
My heart is indeed broken by this. But then, Geordie, what are we going to be reading? How are we kicking off 2025?
2025. Now that is a sci-fi year, you know? If anywhere, any year I was going to get cybernetic eyes implanted, it would be 2025. Can you believe it?
No, I can't believe it. I rewatched the original Back to the Future over the Christmas break, and well, that makes... when they go to the future and it's 2015, you're like, Oh my.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I gotta say, I think more movies should be like in the distant future of 2005.
I just feel like people, especially when they do those films and they're all like apocalyptic, and you're like, oh, you did not have hope. That did not take long.
Duncan, I gotta say, this has probably been the most I've struggled with what we should read next. Often, I'm torn between two books. For the first time ever, I'm torn between three.
Does this mean I get to pick?
No! It does mean, though, that... Alright, I'm gonna make a decision. It does... Duncan knows I've just sat in silence for 12 long seconds, just being like, I've gotta decide. And I have decided. And I think I will start off 2025 in a gesture of kindness and goodwill, Duncan. I'm going to pick a book which I've wanted to read for a long time, and I know that you're kind of up to speed with.
Oh, this is exciting.
Yeah, so you might only need to do a little peruse just to refresh yourself of the details. This is a book that I hear talked about all the time as like an example of, you know, great exciting fantasy. You know, I think this is going to fall down on the sort of Promise of Blood scale. Somewhere it's like, maybe this is going to be groundbreaking, but it is a sort of modern classic of fantasy, and it's one people really love, although we sometimes have a lot of complaints about it. Duncan.
Geordie.
I think to start off 2025, we should read The Witcher, The Last Wish.
Yes, we should. The Last Wish... The Last Wish being the short story collection which collects the first Witcher stories written, and sort of framed as the first in the series. We'll talk about it more later.
Sort of? Yes, I'm so excited. I thought this was the start of the series.
Well, it's The Last Wish, or was it Blood of Elves, or chronologically is it Gathering Storm? Who knows?
Okay, I hear what you're saying. We're doing this one. I'm not changing my mind.
I'm very excited. What an amazing collection of punchy, action-packed short fiction with a cool message. Geordie, you're not going to regret this.
I sure hope not.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of This Is Just a Fantasy, and thank you for listening for another year of Is This Just Fantasy podcasts. As always, please do go and follow us on our Instagram, It's a Fantasy podcast, where we give regular updates when new episode drops, as well as additional reviews and comments. It's also one of the best ways to reach out to us. We really genuinely do love hearing from you. I reply to everyone who messages in. Tell us your thoughts on this year, what you've read, what you would love us to read. It's just great to hear from you. And another great place to reach out to us is thisisjustfantasypodcast@gmail.com. Great to see your comments there. And who knows, just like our friend Killhauser, who sent us a question on Conan the Barbarian, maybe you two will inspire an entire episode.
I love that episode.
It was such good fun. I go and listen to our Conan the Barbarian, how Conan inspired a fan fiction empire. I can't remember the exact title. Dear God, Geordie, I was re-listening to it recently, and I just kept going, oh, I wish I'd mentioned that. Oh, there's a tidbit there that got glanced over, but it was already quite a long episode. There's also some small bits where I'm like, oh, I mispronounced that. Oh, I've mispronounced it again.
I know. It was really embarrassing going back through and finding out. It's pronounced Sprague. Sprague de Camp. Who could have believed it's pronounced Sprague?
Also, I'd like to say, it's like, I'm just going to call him by his last name. I'm like, Sprague is his last name. It's like Leonard Sprague de Camp. Sprague de Camp is his whole...
Camp I just wanted is Camp. Fine, I no, think. I it was Camp. American.
Dear God. And I get the Netherlands and Sweden confused. Ugh. But still a great episode. The core content is on point, and it answers the question what Conan you should read. Robert E. Howard's work. Right, that's another plug. Geordie.
It has.
This has been an amazing year. Some amazing
In some
episodes.
Ways, can't believe that it has been so long ago that we read, you know, Shadow Empire and Murtagh and stuff. But on the other hand, I feel like we've just flown through this last part of the year.
Oh, incredibly. Incredibly. I'll be brutally honest. Looking at the schedule of this last part of the year, it's been a very long time since I've actually read a book sort of in time for an episode. There are even ones that I've read before, like Delegate and Red Country, I'd previously read, like very recently, and then we just happened to cover them. And then I didn't finish Priory. Gibbet Hill took me less than 30 minutes. And even The Worm Return only took me about less than 30 minutes. So probably The Heroes was the last book that I had to, like, actually reread in a 2-week period. So let's get back to pace. I know.
Duncan, I'm looking forward to next year, and I hope that you are too.
I certainly am. I've been your host, Duncan Nicol.
I've been your host, Geordie Bailey. Onwards and upwards.
Bye!